s'achève au 20e jour. Au rythme de la mer, tu n'as pas à t'en faire sur l'île à 25
Welcome back to Typically Tuesdays on 90.1 FM CJSF. My name is Leslie. You just heard Tagbir with Sma, and before that you heard Lila Vangsing Su by Alian Roy, Tilly La Rules, and Lou Adrian Cassidy. I hope you've been enjoying the music playlist thus far. Hope you've been enjoying the music playlist thus far. Tagbir, if you really liked that, I got into their album of the same name, Tagbir, T-A-Q-B-I-R, from We Are Lady Parts, which is this like BBC comedy about this punk rock band of consisting of members who are all Muslim women. It is a fantastic show, first of all, and second of all, well, I was watching some of the cast interviews. They were talking about like what music that they're listening to recently, and Tagbir was one of the names that was dropped. So if you're into like, I think they're from Morocco. If you're into like Moroccan punk rock, get into this album. It's really cool. I think it's like only like 20 minutes long. It's very short, and it was released a few years ago. But I know Tagbir is still performing. I believe they're performing in Glasgow later on this month. If you enjoyed that, join me in the manifestation of more Tagbir music. Just not enough praise for that album. It's really cool. Moving on to more stream of consciousness, no brain thoughts topics. Okay, I want to talk about Fushigi Yugi. I watched the anime, like the original anime, earlier this year. I just didn't have anything to do, I guess. I was like, I need to stretch my wings or something like that and get into more classic shoujo that technically I grew up with. It was really interesting in that actually I didn't really enjoy it. I really did not like the series all that much. There was just like a lot, and it's just like so incredibly heterosexual. I had remembered when I was young, like very young, going to the local public library and seeing volumes of this manga in the manga section. And, you know, back then there wasn't, like, a whole lot of, like, shoujo manga that was on the shelves of my local public library. It was, like, this, Fruits Basket, Auron High School Host Club, Vampire Knight, or Banana Fish. If you know, you know. If you know the story about me and Banana Fish, you know. Shiki Yugi was one of them. And at the time, I was, like, really considering if I should, like, try out this series. And I would, like, look it up to read the Wikipedia page and stuff like that. And I really remembered that kind of, like, the main antagonist, one of the main antagonists of the story is a young girl named Yui. She was, like, presented to be, like, this, like, really horrendous person who was, like, extremely driven to, like, ruin the main character's life. The main character is Miyaka. And really driven to, like, steal Miyaka's man. His name is Tamahome. And she's just, like, really sinister and nasty. And so that was the impression that I had going into watching the series, you know, like, legitimately, like, 20 or more years later. You know, in retrospect, I should not have been flipping through the pages of Fushigi Yugi when I was that young. It is quite mature, actually. I was just, like, watching the anime this year, you know, and I realized just how decontextualized Yui's character was written to be in those Wikipedia pages. Because, if you know, you should... And I can't really explain the whole thing to you. Essentially, Miyaka and Yui used to be best friends, or middle school students, and they both got transported into this, like, fantasy novel epic in which there are four kingdoms, and it's essentially kind of like Avatar the Last Airbender in some ways, because the Fire Nation is, like, really going in, trying to colonize the whole place. Miyaka is the chosen one of the kingdoms. She's supposed to be the priestess who summons the guardian of that kingdom, that will protect all of mankind, etc. Yui is the priestess of the kind of, like, Fire Nation type kingdom, who's supposed to summon the other guardian, who has essentially been corrupted. And, you know, that kind of lays the premise of the series, in that, like, the kingdom, I guess, that Yui is supposed to devote her life to, or whatever, or, like, literally become, like, a sacrifice to, like, they're, like, very much against Miyaka's kingdom, because Miyaka's kingdom is kind of, like, the quote-unquote good ones. However, this does not technically explain why Yui is so nasty to Miyaka throughout the rest of the series. We learn, essentially, that Yui has been manipulated and abused by the person who saves her from an assault, and he, like, kind of, like, brainwashes her into believing that, like, Miyaka abandoned her, and that, like, Yui will never find true love unless she, like, takes everything away from Miyaka and stuff like that. And it's really, really horrible, because when I think about it, and I think about, like, those Wikipedia pages that I read when I was young, Yui is, I think she's, like, a 14-year-old. She's extremely traumatized by the events of what occurs as she is transported into this world, into this fantasy realm. And then she just gets, like, totally exploited and manipulated by these horrible people. And we're supposed to believe, based off of this Wikipedia page, that, like, she truly is like this evil mastermind. In fact, she has no agency basically throughout the entire series. It is quite sad to watch her, you know, in the show, in the story, and she's forced to like essentially destroy the life of her best friend, and she has no idea why she's supposed to. She's just been told that like her best friend like no longer wants to be with her, like hates her and stuff like that, and like has left her to ruin and to rot, and she's still unable to process, you know, the very traumatic violence that she endures throughout the series. Like, it's really horrible. I'm just thinking about how interesting it is. Here's my, okay, maybe one actual thought that I have is, how interesting is it that in a lot of these like shoujo manga, especially the ones that I grew up reading, but I think this also is still a trope in a lot of shoujo manga because it's like heavily satirized in this one manga also about shoujo manga called Monthly Girls Nozaki-kun. Anyways, it's very interesting how in these stories, like, the main villains are often women. Like, at least the face of evil is often a woman. And of course, the main character, who's, you know, the good guy, who's usually also a woman. You know, women against women. Is this feminism? Are we showing girls that they can be whatever they want? And also, are we pitting women against each other? So much to think about there. Not for today's show. Here is Shane Ghostkeeper with One More Name. Get into it.
First language of this Métis man, but I was just needing a little help working on this brand new phrase at home. Well, my love has never heard me speak before, no. I witness the bite of a glistening lip, I slip, I drop down to one knee. For taking so long to find the piece of this in a puzzle, the key to this heart's muzzle is not ways. Was your eyes would soothe my soul like nothing else. A far second, maybe the hues of the rainbow eucalyptus. I accept this, and well, now I got this sapphire in a little velvet box. My love, wait up. Just
is Bird Note. Great-tailed grackles are known for their long, expressive tails and their wide vocabulary of odd sounds. But this bird has another special trait. A researcher named Jessica Yorzinski has shown that great-tailed grackles can look at two different objects at once. If you've seen a chameleon's two independently swiveling eyes, you have a sense for how this works. Yorzinski placed two screens to the left and right of a grackle, so each screen was visible to only one eye. Human faces briefly appeared on the screens. When the face on the left was higher than the one on the right, the grackle pointed one eye up and one eye down to look at both faces simultaneously. This is the best example yet of a bird that can look at two objects at once. In another study, zebra finches failed to look at two separate targets like the grackles, but other birds may have the ability too. It's still unclear how well the grackles' brains can process two different views, but it's possible that great-tailed grackles can have one eye on the lookout for predators and another eye searching for food. Whatever it looks like, a grackle's eye view of the world is likely a fuller picture than most of us can see. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
One by TNCE and Jaw Wobble off of the album Red Mist here on 90.1 FM CJSF. Typically Tuesdays. My name is Leslie. I'm the host for this hour. I'm the host of Typically Tuesdays. Hope you enjoyed today's playlist. Hope you got to turn off your brain and I don't know what else. But I hope it was a time for you and I hope it was somewhat positive. Here's one last song for you this hour. Busty and the Bass and Jordan Brown with Starstruck, the break glass version. Thanks for tuning in to Typically Tuesdays. I'll talk to you very soon.
Listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Greetings.